You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for the New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Over 7 million different animals inhabit our planet.
But the brain power of the manta ray blows most fish out of the water. Because a manta ray is a fish,
yeah.
So
okay.
What can they teach us?
So they socialize while they're feeding. So it's like us at dinner, right? That's the big thing about being human is it's a time for us to socialize. Yeah.
Many species are in crisis and need your help. Join the movement at allcreaturespod.com.
Welcome to the All Creatures Podcast. This is Chris.
And I'm Angie.
How's your holiday, Angie? Going well with the blueberries?
Oh, blueberries are great. The Michigan weather is amazing. I did bring a little bit of the heat from Florida with me. So the first couple of days it was everybody around me was sweating, but I was like, oh, I need a sweatshirt. And I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
But no, it's mellowed out and we got to spend a lot of time on the shores of Lake Michigan. Boys are really into climbing sand dunes and I like to collect rocks while they're climbing the sand dunes. And so, and then in the afternoon, we have a nice little blueberry snack right out in the front yard. So
yeah,
my complaints are pretty minimal. Oh, go ahead.
Yes. For listeners, when do you pick blueberries?
And well, it's in every state. It's a little bit different depending on the season, but in North America, it's the summertime. So right. In Florida, it starts back in May around Mother's Day. I was able to pick blueberries on Mother's Day in Florida. Mm-hmm. But the Michigan season, Michigan blueberries, which are by far, hands down, the best blueberries
the best.
In the world.
Yes.
And they have a nice, the best, they're the biggest, the firmest, and they have the best flavor, the most sugar content. Because blueberries like to get cold over the wintertime. That helps the sugars do what they need to do in the plant to make the fruit taste better. So they prefer our cold winters and so they're amazing. And it starts about July 4th or around our Independence Day. This season it was a little early because we had that gnarly heat. So they started picking, I think like June 30th. It'll last until basically Labor Day.
Okay. So there you go.
For people not in the States, that's the end of August.
Okay. So buy all your blueberries.
8 weeks of blueberry mania.
Yeah. So buy all your blueberries now, right? Yeah. Support Andy.
Yes. And you can buy a whole bunch of them and then I just put them in the freezer. So then you have them all year round.
Yeah.
And it's much cheaper than because now, of course, in your local grocery, you can buy frozen blueberries, but they're usually more expensive or not quite as high of quality as the ones you can get in the summertime. So,
And they're not from Michigan.
They're one of the world's healthiest foods. That's why, I mean, Chris, I just had a birthday. That's one of the reasons why I love to come to Michigan and I've been eating blueberries my whole life. And I mean, how old do I look? Right.
You look like you're 10. And you got blue tinge of the skin, and it was Willy Wonka, right? You're the blueberry girl.
Yes. She ate too many blueberries and blew up like one, which I mean, I do that as well, but no, the blueberries are good for your skin. And I definitely don't look the age that I just turned. And I definitely age that I just turned. So
Angie was
and this podcast is keeping me young as well. It's keeping me on my toes.
yeah. All right. Well, you know, let's get started on today's episode. But you, you know, with education, blueberries. That's good. Something different. Just want to up front thank two of our newest Patreon supporters, Debbie and Maureen. Thank you. You know, it means a lot to us to get the support.
Debbie, yeah. Maureen, we love you.
Yes, yes. And so Angie and I have been working on some, we're going to be working on some Patreon-only content coming soon. So we'll have details in the next few weeks once that's all ready to go. Just getting our schedules. You know, I'm traveling next week. She's traveling. And once we get back from all this, then we will start hammering that out. But, you know, Angie and I each week talk about the podcast and what we're doing. We love what we're doing. We believe in this project and we're just going to keep doing this. You know, we're dedicated to it. So
yeah, well, a lot of listeners that send us feedback, we really appreciate the messages.
Yes. And
it's always fun to learn from you guys, learn what species we should do, what content you're liking or wanting more of. And it does, it gives me an amazing reason to get up in the morning and do this. Or as Chris was joking, how I am on quote unquote vacation doing the podcast, but this is extremely fun and makes me, it's very fulfilling. And today we're going to be talking about manta rays.
Yes, yes. So
for me, I told Chris, I was like, well, I'm not going to prepare anything. I'm just going to talk about when I got to snorkel with them.
Yeah, yeah. Now, where were you? Where were you when you got to do that?
So I was in Hawaii, the big island of Hawaii. For those of you that aren't as familiar with the different islands, it's the big island is not as touristy. It's the biggest island, but it's also a lot. It's more remote. And my best friend lives out there, Nani. So John and I flew out there after we had been married for about a year to kind of celebrate. And they hosted us graciously for a few days. And then my parents helped get us a hotel right on the western edge of the island. There's a city called Kona, K-O-N-A. And we were there in March. So from our hotel room, we could actually watch the whales. The humpback whales.
Humpbacks.
We would just be sipping our coffee in our like nice hotel robes. Cause like I said, we didn't pay for the hotel room. So we were like totally, we were totally living it up. It's like honeymoon, honeymoon 2.0, but sipping our coffee, watching the whales breach. It was life changing. I don't know if I'll ever be able to get back there again now that I have all these kids and it's so expensive.
I know.
But yeah. So, in Hawaii, there's, off the Kona coast of the big island of Hawaii, it's like the only place in the world where you can experience diving and or snorkeling with manta rays with a really high probability of seeing them. So they basically over years, they've trained the, I don't know if train's the right word, but they've conditioned, that's a better word. They've conditioned the manta rays that when there's a light beam that goes up when it's dark out, that attracts a lot of the zooplankton. And therefore, the manta rays go there and feed every night. And they have two spots. There's the Manta Village, which is where I saw it, and it's near the Sheraton, so right off the coast, pretty deep water. But yeah, it was super cool. John and I just did the snorkeling adventure. We didn't do the diving because both of our dive certifications had run out. And we were kind of in a hurry or didn't have the time to renew them while we were there. So we did the snorkeling experience. Right. So we were looking above the water where the divers, when they do it, are down below. But because of the way the manta rays feed, it's basically like this amazing black and white giant ghost floating, slowly flapping through the ocean. And then spinning upward to eat the plankton. It was awesome. And so,
those life moments.
I mean, it definitely was life changing and gave me just a greater appreciation for the ocean and the creatures that inhabit it. And of course, when we were as a guest doing this experience, we had to go through a lot of rules and regulations. They made us watch a video, safety training. You know, you can't touch the animals. You can't, if you're snorkeling, you can't dive down. If you're diving, you can't go up. Yeah. So there was a lot of, I felt like they really did a good job of not exploiting the animals and giving, I obviously was already.
So like a good ecotourism, right?
Definitely great ecotourism. And I was already a wildlife and or ocean lover, but I think for people that probably maybe aren't as big of animal dork as I am. Yeah. They probably once they do this experience, I'm sure they fall in love with the animals and they talked a lot about, they did a lot with education and conservation, on the trip. And so, yeah. And then the other one near, where we went to Manta Village, but the other one's called Manta Heaven, just not that away, a few miles away, and that dive site. And one night their record is like 46 manta rays.
Holy smokes.
Yeah. So I didn't see
that would be amazing.
Yeah. I think our night there was probably 8 or 9, but they're so big and you just watch them and you're just in awe about the beautiful world, the creatures that inhabit it. And they're so graceful.
Yeah. Yeah, these ones are really cool. And it just made me think too. Shout out to Ashley in South Africa. She messaged us and so Ashley requested that we do leatherback sea turtles and made me think about when I was in Maui, I actually saw the sea turtles. So when I snorkeled, I got to swim with at least turtles. Not as cool. I mean, turtles are awesome, but manta rays. Oh my God. That is amazing.
Oh yeah. It was, I mean, once we, cause we just went to the Big Island because my best friend's there and I've been to the other islands or a lot of the other islands previously. John had never been to Hawaii and he was kind of like, I'm like, well, this is where we're going. So we're going to see my, we're going to see my best friend. This is what we're doing. And so we didn't do any research because I'm like, she lives there. She'll tell us where to eat, tourist things to do, what not to do. And the very first thing she said, she's like, oh, you have to do this. You have to see the manta rays.
Oh, yeah.
She's like, it's so unique. She's like, honestly, you can go whale watching off of many coasts. And it's just, and then we realized we could just watch them from our hotel room. So that saved us. That saved us money. And so that was kind of that and the lava. We went and made like John's favorite thing in the whole world. Probably maybe, even though he's an animal guy, I think it was probably, he probably liked it better than swimming with the manta rays or snorkeling with them. The lava was flowing and actively flowing when we were there, which it is currently actively flowing.
However,
worse this time. When we were there, it was just like moderate or very mild. So we actually hiked right up into the lava and made earth. So John thought he was pretty cool making earth, which I mean, I think is cool too, but he just was.
John's a lucky guy. I'm telling you, you made him go to Africa. You made him go to Hawaii. Where's next?
Stick with me, kid. That's what I tell him. Stick with me. I get a lot of my, I get a lot of my adventure gene from my late father. He was, he always took us on some pretty wacky and wonky adventures. And, that's the spice of life that makes it all happen. So.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you were talking about the amazing creatures in the ocean. So I was like, all right, we're going back to the ocean again. We keep covering like every other one's an ocean creature.
Our audience a little insight to Chris and I and our daily dialogue. But Chris thinks we're doing too many ocean animals, and I'm like, no way, Jose.
I love them. Like it's amazing. Each one we've covered has been amazing. There's, and there's so many species on Earth, but I just was curious. I'm like, okay, we keep going back to the ocean because they are charismatic. We talk about that. We want to look at them. We want to learn about them. And so I went and looked up some statistics and this was from NOAA. And this was interesting, Angie. 91% of oceanic species have yet to be classified. 91%.
Wow.
Like, we don't know anything about our oceans. Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Well, and it is true. 91%. Like just diving into their physiology and their reproduction and of course their behavior. My goodness. There's a lot less data out there. And it always leaves me being like, man, I want to go work for one of these groups and learn more about X, Y, and Z. Because there's clearly a lot to learn. So maybe it's the mystery of it or.
I don't know. It's just. And 95% of the ocean is yet to be explored.
Wow.
This is all according to NOAA, the United States. So, you know, dig a little bit deeper on this. They did do a 10-year oceanic survey, and I'm going to put the link in the show notes. I made a big mark on my slide here to remind me to do that. That there's an estimate 2 to 10 million species in the ocean. They don't know quite how many, but they've discovered over 230,000.
Okay.
So, to date, mm-hmm. they know of 230,000 species in the ocean, but still, that's minuscule.
Sure. To, what they think is out there.
What's out there.
Wow, that's exciting. Yeah,
10% or 2 to 10%.
Wow.
Now, I will say there's more species out on land, Angie. There's a lot more species on land. 80% of all species live on land, according to the estimates.
Does that include insects?
But you're talking plants.
Plants, yes, and insects?
Everything.
Okay.
Yeah, plants, insects, everything. So, yeah, there's a lot more species to cover. 15% of total species in the ocean, 5% in freshwater. So, but, you know, manta rays are amazing and the ocean animals are great. Like, they're just phenomenal. And there's been a lot of focus on oceans of late. So that's really good.
Oh, absolutely. We've got to save them. Well, and you're going to want to stay tuned with us today because we're going to cover a lot of fun things about manta rays. We haven't even touched on their size yet. So that's pretty mm-hmm. exciting. Mm-hmm. But the brain power of the manta ray mm-hmm. blows most fish out of the water because the manta ray is a fish.
Yeah.
So okay. we'll cover that in a little more detail, yes. of course. It's related to sharks, skates, yeah. rays. But yes, so stay mm-hmm. tuned to learn just how smart they are or how smart we think they are. And
yeah.
you will be shocked. I know I was.
Okay. 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 I want to learn.
Yes.
I didn't delve into that, so that will be exciting. Now, you just said how big they are, and we did do the whale shark a few pods ago, which was, again, another amazing ocean-going animal. Not quite as big as the whale shark. Whale shark's still the biggest fish in the mm-hmm. sea. The whale shark was 46 feet or 14 meters, roughly. Giant manta rays are 29 feet across or 9 meters. I didn't know this until we covered them in a news segment a few weeks ago. Like, I didn't realize they got that
big.
Yeah,
that's huge.
Like, that 3 stories tall? That's insane. That's insane. I didn't realize they were that big.
Yeah, I mean, and this is the wingspan, right, that you're talking about with yeah.
Yes, yes.
Oh, yeah. No, it was, I don't know if I saw quite that large where in Kona where I was, but, I mean, definitely 5 to 7 meters easily. Huge. Huge, huge.
Yeah. That's huge. That's huge. Now, of course, these are the world's largest ray, mm-hmm. you know, with that being said. And just to get in kind of the description, so they have these diamond-shaped bodies with wings, but they're really properly called the pectoral mm-hmm. fins, right? So they're really wide. Now, this was cool, too. I didn't really realize this with rays. The gill slits are underneath or ventral. They're on the bottom.
They're on the bottom.
Right?
Mm-hmm. That's why they kind of look...
Yeah. They're not...
When you look underneath from the bottom side up at them, like if you are a diver, they look so cute because it's their gill slits.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird. It's really weird. So I just didn't even think of that, their physiology. It never hit me that they're underneath them. Now, their eyes are to the side, kind of like the whale shark, right? Mm-hmm. So their face kind of looks similar. But then, and this will be cool too when we get to nutrition, is they have the cephalic lobes, mm-hmm. so around the mouth. And that's really a unique feature. I think they're the only vertebrate to have these extra appendages around the mouth, which is important to help propel water into their mouths.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. It was really cool.
And by these cephalic lobes, if you're not familiar with the manta ray, definitely look at our show notes or Google it. But they're almost like arms coming out of the sides of their mouths or fins coming out of the sides of their mouth that, like Chris said, they act as almost a funnel. They help get their food into their mouth, but it's a really unique adaptation that a lot of the other rays mm-hmm. and skates don't have.
Yeah. It was really crazy. Now the ones you saw, you said they were black and white. So they had the white underside.
Yes. And so, I was on top of the water snorkeling, mm-hmm. looking down. So I probably got a little bit of the short end of the stick. If I had to do it all over again, I would spend the extra time, the extra couple $100 mm-hmm. to redo my dive certification so I could see all the action. because yes, looking down at the top, at their top side, they're, yeah, black or gray in color. Mm-hmm. And, but I could see them, their underside sometimes when they would do spins or rolls, if you will, or when they're, I could see a wing flap come up and the underside is in a lighter, light gray, whitish in color.
Right. Did you see any spots? Cause they all have individual spots on their bellies.
Chris, I did not. It is the water it is dark out. So when you do this, there, you know, it's pitch black out and they are able to light, like they have a couple lights down at the ocean floor, probably about 30 feet, 30 foot maybe. Yeah. And it shoot the light up, but it's still not the same as if you've ever snorkeled or dove, which I've had the pleasure to do both of. During the daytime, you have a greater visibility. So, the reason Chris brings up these cute little spots on their belly is that, it's almost like a fingerprint and it's these little black spots. Mm-hmm. Researchers use it as a way to identify and tell different manta rays apart when they're doing research studies on
them. Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. It's crazy. Now there are these giant rays too that can be black, totally black. So a few of them are, but I think that, you know, like we talked about, almost in every, if you think about every ocean going fish, not everyone, I guess, but a lot of them, you know, like just think of a penguin, black on top, white on the bottom. Again, that's an anti-predator, you know, like Angie said, looking down at them, it's harder to see. Yeah. And then when looking up at them with the light, it's harder to see them. So some of these darker ones, because we will get into how deep they go too. So.
And most people, when you say a ray or a skate, think about the tail that has the barb that as for stingrays, right? That can, that can be used as, a method to protect themselves. And so the manta ray, it does have a short whip-like tail, but unlike many rays, other ray species, it doesn't have any sharp barbs on it.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, a little bit different between the manta ray and the stingrays and the other species.
Correct.
Now there are two species of manta ray, the giant manta rays and then the reef manta rays. Now the giant manta rays are bigger. Mm-hmm. The reef manta rays get about 18 feet, 5.5 meters and not quite as big. Mm-hmm. The scientific name of the giant manta ray is Manta barostris. And then the reef, that's easy. This one's easy. The reef Manta alfredi.
I was like, I'll tell Chris I'll do it this week, but I'm like, no, I'm on vacation.
Yeah, well, the reef is Manta alfredi. I mean, come on. It's so easy.
Yeah, super easy. Yeah.
So there are two species, and Angie and I talked, we're going to kind of refer to both of them throughout the pod. You know, they're similar physiology, just a little bit. The reef's just smaller. That's it. And that's still huge. I mean, 18 feet is enormous.
Yes. Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Now the habitat or where they are, Angie, so you're Hawaii, right? So the giants are oceanic migratory is how they classify them.
Yep.
And so I was interested, okay, how far do they migrate? Do they go from the Indian Ocean to all the way across, you know, to this, cause they can get down to South Africa. Do they go up into the Atlantic? And they don't, they actually don't migrate that far. I mean, they go far. So for example, some of the tracking studies they've done, they've gone from like the Yucatan Peninsula out into the Gulf of Mexico.
Okay.
And gone around there or like across the world from Mozambique to South Africa. So, you know, I mean, still it's what hundreds of kilometers. It's still pretty far, but it's not like across all the world or all the oceans.
And they definitely tend to prefer the tropical, warm, temperate coastal regions of the oceans.
Yeah. Yeah. They did. They did find them as, I think, as far north as New Jersey. You know, in Japan.
Okay. Wow.
So looking across, but typically, I don't know. And, you know, I know some of the studies I read about global warming and the oceans, and I know migratory patterns of fish. Like I know off the Oregon coast in California, on the Western United States, they're finding some tropical fish up there now that have never been there or seen there before. Right. So it's not a good thing, but yeah. Yeah. Now this is exciting. Because I have the migratory map on here, they have seen them near New Zealand.
Ah, well, stay
the North Island.
Stay tuned for one of my conservation groups. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. All right. So they maybe I can go up to Northland, go to the very tippy top of New Zealand.
Maybe, but dude, scratch that. Let's meet in Hawaii. We'll stay at my friend's place and we'll bring the kids because we can just throw them outside in her backyard in a tent. Because for those of listeners that aren't familiar with Hawaii, Hawaii is so amazing that they don't, in their homes, the people that live there, they don't have heat or air conditioning.
Yeah.
Like in the houses.
Yeah, it's perfect.
They don't have any of that because they don't need any of it.
Yeah.
That's how perfect it is there.
Yeah.
I know you're from San Diego, and San Diego's pretty perfect too. But I know y'all had air conditioning there.
Yeah.
In Hawaii, you don't need it.
No, heat. Yeah, and heat. Yeah.
So
Hawaii's awesome.
Hopefully you'll find a place, but if you don't, you're kind of close to Hawaii, so it's
a good place to meet in the middle. Yeah, no, it'd be good. I'd love Hawaii. I absolutely love it. Now, the manta rays, the water temperature. So I thought this was interesting because you said temperate. So it can be as cold, quote unquote, 19°C, which is only 66 degrees Fahrenheit. So that's not
what I was swimming in Lake Michigan yesterday, basically. But
is it that cold? I mean, the water here is so cold.
It might have been the 68 maybe. I don't know. It was. But all my family from Michigan,
it's not
tough
Florida,
as nails, are like diving
water.
In, and I'm like a little sissy whoop. I'm like, nope.
Yeah, polar bear club.
Yeah, totally, totally.
yeah, and then up to 30 degrees Celsius or 86 degrees.
Now
Fahrenheit.
We're so talking. That's my kind of water.
That's off Tampa, the Gulf water is bath water.
Yeah.
So they do go all kind of both ranges. Now, I think a good question that we need to talk about, Angie, is why care about manta rays? And I just up front, I will just say they're both species are vulnerable. Their global reduction of 30%. So they are in trouble.
Yes.
And I think there's a reason we should care, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in the past, the giant one was commercially hunted from small boats, but currently it's rarely hunted. There's definitely been some protection measures put into place, which we'll discuss a little bit more in the conservation section. And for me, this section of why should we care about manta rays is very easy for me because I actually got to snorkel with them and spend time with them, watching their behaviors, watching their majestic wings through the water, watching them move, how they're gentle giants. But not everybody's going to have that luxury. So one thing I can suggest as well is I'll have Chris put on the show notes, maybe some videos of them moving through the water. If you're not as familiar with them or if you're not just in general, if you used to just write off the stingray family or ray family in general because they potentially could be dangerous, don't do that. Give them a chance, and you'll probably fall in love the way that I did, even if you don't get the opportunity to snorkel or dive with them. But with that being said, one of the biggest impacts for the manta ray currently has come from the tourism, and a lot of dive industries have created these spots. Of course, I'm highlighting today the one that out of Kona, Hawaii, the Big Island, where I was so lucky to go. But there's several spots. I mean, in Fiji, in the Maldives.
Yeah, Peru. I saw that. Yeah.
So there's definitely lots of spots for our international listeners or other places to go. And I don't know if I went to the best one, but I know that the one I went to was really awesome. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this way you could just get up close and personal and look at these gentle giants.
Yeah.
And I saw a number out there for people that are a little bit more economically motivated than perhaps I'm more motivated with my heartstrings, of course.
Right.
But they estimate that each year tourists spend probably about $140
million
U.S. to see manta rays in the wild.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Wow.
It wasn't cheap.
Cheap. Let's move to Hawaii and get a little boat. And we could do the podcast from the boat. And
if only it was that easy.
I know.
Because
I know.
One of the good things, too, is a lot of a lot of the groups where the manta ray sightings and snorkelings are, they really are upping the regulations putting clauses and basically stopping overcrowding. And only let the manatees here in Florida, they only let so many licenses, so many people go in. They're trying to control it because they know it's such a great resource. And, this tourism can definitely be part of the solution with combating other issues with fisheries, because sometimes they get caught in nets. And, if we can get countries to see the strong economic incentive to protect these animals, that maybe they can get bumped up from the IUCN declares them as vulnerable, their populations, at least see their population stabilize, if not decrease.
Right. Yeah, I just had another brilliant idea.
Oh my God, he's full of it tonight. See, this is awesome. You're not even on vacation yet.
No. When we hit it big time, let's just do a podcast group in like Africa, and then you and I can lead like a little group in Africa, and we can go and talk about all the different animals and educate and all that fun stuff. And we can do like All Creatures Podcast meet in, I guess we'll meet at Ashley's house in South Africa.
Yes.
Hey, Ashley, we're coming down.
Don't worry. We'll put the kids in a tent in the backyard. It all will be good. All good.
With the honey badgers. But we go to the Kruger, you know, and go see some Cape Buffalo.
Our kids are allowed. They would scare away any wildlife, and even in Africa, trust me.
I want to go with Allison. We need to get Allison Kennedy Benson to be our tour guide.
Oh, yes, definitely. So, I like the idea of the live podcast feeds from on-site locations. So we'll get there.
Yeah, we'll work
get there,
on it.
Chris,
we'll
someday.
So get some the species description, like Angie said, sharks, rays, and skates. These are cartilage fish. They belong to the subclass Elasmobrachii, and they don't have swim bladders. Okay. They have a rigid dorsal fin. And then this is a word of the day. Another one, placoid scales.
Okay.
So, you know, sharks, I know we talked about rattlesnakes. We talked about the skin being tough with their scales. I know with sharks, you go down and it's not one side smooth, the direction that they're swimming, right? So if you go back, it's smooth, but if you go forward, it's really, really rough. So I actually have a cool microscopy image of the scales. So the scales are rough, placoid scales. So that's most of these fish that belong to this subfamily. Now, just, here's really fast evolution. The first cartilage fish was about 395 billion years ago during the Devonian period. Yeah. So some of the first, animal life forms were these cartilage fish. The first rays were about 170 million years ago during the Jurassic period, so during T-Rex and all those fun dinosaurs running around. Manta rays specifically evolved about 20 million years ago. Today's species evolved about 5 million years ago, and they are finding fossils. We talked about the cartilage.
It's harder. It's harder.
It's not like a bone.
To find them.
Yeah, it's harder to find. Especially ocean going. But 5 million years old, these species have been around a long time. Now, to get specifically into rays, the manta ray, stingray, skate, sawfish belong to the rays.
Oh, sawfish.
So if you look at it, I was like, really, sawfish? And then you see a picture of them and it kind of makes sense because they've kind of got that flat bottom.
Okay.
So their gills are underneath. And this is the superorder Batodiae. Mm-hmm. So 600 species in 26 families, flat bodies, large pec fins, ventral gill slits. And more specifically, getting into just some of these rays. The Mylobatiforms is what they're called, manta and stingrays, and there's 223 species. Now, this is kind of sad. 50 are threatened with extinction, so almost one out of four.
Oh, wow.
So 25%. Yeah, that's sad. Now, Angie, I couldn't find anything in evolution, like there was this giant manta ray that's already not giant. So I went with the largest ray ever caught. Was, the Guinness Book of World Records has it off the U.S. at 30 feet and over 2,200 pounds or 1,000 kilograms. Now, I have this image. This one was accidentally caught in Peru. Again, this is one of their threats is bycatch. They think it might be up to 36 feet, but it's unconfirmed. Okay. So they couldn't get the Guinness Book of World Records people there fast enough, I guess. But the image, it's huge. It's actually really sad to see this thing dead, but it's enormous. Like, my God, these things are – I never realized they were that big, ever.
Yeah, ever. No, it wasn't – like I said, too, even when I was preparing to go snorkel with them, I hadn't really done my homework because before I was a podcaster and, or even a researcher. And so, yeah, I just kind of went along for the ride and then, yeah, I got in the water and was like, holy shnikes, these guys are.
Yeah.
And, you know, and even then it's still, there's still a little distortion when you're like floating above and like looking down at something. Mm. It's not like I was able to be that close to them and actually, you know, within an arm's, sometimes divers, because they are gentle giants, I mean, they'll glide right past a diver and a diver could potentially put their hand out and touch them. And there might, there's probably some pictures on the internet, maybe of a diver next to it. So you could kind of get an image, maybe throw one of those up on our show notes. So you can get an image of just basically how they dwarf you.
No, they are huge. They are huge.
But interestingly enough, too, with the evolution, the manta rays and the devil rays, the manta rays and the devil rays are the only the ray species that have evolved into the filter feeders.
Okay. That's right. Because I mean, the other ones, like the stingrays, they eat fish, right? They eat other fish. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they're more carnivorous, I guess. And
well, they're both carnivorous, I think. But it's
That's right. Little tiny animals. the little tiny
Chris,
tiny
it's
ones.
Okay, buddy. I had your back, man. I was covering you.
Okay. Now these can live. They the only thing they know is up to 40 years, but they're really not sure. I mean, they know they can live that long.
Yeah, I think the average numbers out there is 20 years, but once again, it goes to what were your statistics early? 91% of the animals in the ocean we don't know anything about or something. So I think our data, there's definitely some inconclusive data there.
Yeah. Now here's some good data though. So this was some of the stuff coming out of the Dutch Shark Society. So again, I'm going to put this link up.
That's some of my roots. I'm kind of a mutt. I'm a mixture of everything, but
yeah.
Without doing a DNA test, I was always told that I had a lot of Dutch in me.
So. Okay. You look it.
Let's hear about this Dutch study.
Yeah. You look Irish too. You got to have a little bit Irish. Everybody's got a little bit Irish, right?
Yeah. I can't drink the Irish whiskey, but I can do some Guinness. That's for sure.
Yeah. Okay. So they can travel up to 70 kilometers in a single day. So 30 something miles. And the Dutch Shark Society, say that fast, measured a ray diving as deep as 560 feet or 170 meters.
Wow. Now this was,
so this was their study. Now there are some reports, and I'll get to that nutrition here in a second, that they can go as deep as 1,000 meters, which is 3,300 feet.
That's crazy.
That's deep. Yeah, that's very really deep. Yeah. And when they do dive, they don't swim, but they more glide.
Right.
You know, to conserve energy. Mm-hmm. You probably saw some of that behavior, which is amazing.
Oh, yes.
Now, which was during the day, they stay in the top 10 meters of the water, 10 to 30 feet.
Mm-hmm.
But during night, now, obviously, your experience is because they were a little bit habituated. They were attracting the zooplankton, everything like that. But typically, like, especially when they're out in the ocean, that's when they're going to be diving deep.
Right.
You know, is mostly at night. Mm-hmm. So, and that's off the study. So again, there is some science that's going on. Yeah. And so what was interesting is reading some of the facts about it, Angie, is they have this incredible countercurrent exchange. And I know you're going to talk about their brains and how incredible they are or not incredible. They could be just dumb. Maybe we're on the edge of our seats to learn about that, but they have this really great countercurrent exchange to keep the brain warm and active on these deep dives. And just a brief, I know we talked about this before, a countercurrent exchange is, you can imagine the pectoral fins, the blood out to the pectoral fins cools off. And then as it comes back to the body, the warm blood going out runs right by it. So there's a transfer of energy. So it warms up that blood that's coming back in to the body. So it thermoregulates, keeps us warm and going. So their brains need to stay warm when they go that deep, right? To to function. So they have a really good blood supply to the brain that maintains that.
Yeah. I mean, basically when they dive deep, from, they effectively almost become warm blooded. And they can, and they have the ability to keep their temperature stable, a lot more stable than most fish.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy. Evolution, biology, it's just.
The ocean. It's all radical, man.
The ocean is amazing. It really is. Now, these ones are hunted by sharks, the big ones, the tigers, the great hammerhead, bull sharks, killer whales, false killer whales. And this was interesting. I read some of the larger rays have injuries like from shark bites and stuff. So a shark will come and take a bite, you know, healed over. And then one that they always see is this one we have to do at some point. It's the cookie cutter shark. And I think it was
familiar.
I think it was on Octonauts. I think like
everything good is on Octonauts. Yes. You know, I'll have to ask Xander about it. I don't know about this cookie cutter shark.
They attach and they cut out a cookie of flesh, a round mark, and then they detach and they eat that. Yeah. Isn't it crazy?
Wow.
Yeah. So ask about Octonauts. The giant manta rays, actually from the work, the research that's been done, they actually have less wounds, about 10%, where the reef manta rays actually have more. They have like 70% of reef manta rays in some areas have done that. Now, like you said, these are filter feeders, so they eat zooplankton, maybe some small fish that get sucked in there. We talked about the cephalic fins, creates this O shape that helps the funnel, pushes the water into the mouth, goes over the gill rakers, which catches the zooplankton. You talked about how they roll, they're feeding, you know, which is really cool. Now, this one was, here's another study out of Australia. They found manta ray diets are made up of mostly of deep sea organisms. So yeah, so they found, I think it was about 70% of their stomach contents were from sea life that lives between the mesopelagic zone, which is anywhere from 200 to 1000 meters or 600 to 3300 feet. So the Dutch study showed these ones staying kind of up above that. Whereas in Australia, they found these ones actually most of the time they spent deeper feeding.
Yeah. So I thought that was kind of cool. They're able to adapt, and maybe it depends on what time of year or the water temperature, who knows? Yeah. But yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah. Now their feeding behavior, Angie, I thought you would have loved this. And I, for any of the listeners out there that saw Moana, the movie Moana, which is a great Disney movie. And a lot of it was about based on Maori, which is the native people here in New Zealand. Oh, I didn't know that. So it's kind of really cool for us now.
Yeah,
it's really cool for us.
I've been wanting Xander to watch it for a while, and he's been just not that interested in it. So I finally, we finally sat down and watched it, and he loved it. And I love the soundtrack from it, so I'll play that a lot. Yeah, the songs are just really, really fun. And it's a beautiful kid movie, but adults like it too, so that's kind of why it's fun.
I mean, just the history of them, like that one, my favorite is that one song where it shows them, you know, on their rafts, like in how they spread out across the ocean. It was just and I mean the native people to New Zealand didn't get here till 1300s,
right?
So they haven't been here for thousands of years. They've only been here for a few hundred, you know. So anyways, there's a point in there where the grandma, it's more towards the beginning, where she's out with rays, and the rays are circling around her. It's really beautiful. So National Geographic has this behavior on video. So I'm definitely going to post it. And Andrea Marshall of the Marine Megafauna Foundation, she's the one that kind of has been studying this. It is actually them feeding. It's a feeding behavior and social behavior. So they socialize while they're feeding. So it's like us at dinner, right? That's the big thing about being human, is it's a time for us to socialize. Yeah. So they stack up in around each other and circle. And I guess the one in front gets most of it, most of the zooplankton. So they'll actually change positions and allow the other ones to all get their fill. Like, just incredible.
Yeah. It's really gorgeous the way that they swim in these vertical loops. And yeah, the researchers think besides the social part of it, it helps funnel and or keep the plankton in a similar area, or to right. to congregate them, to basically concentrate. That's the word, to concentrate their right. you know, the food and make it easier. So it's like acts like a funnel, and it helps increase their feed. And but they need them all to do it, right? Because if just one did it, mm-hmm. it wouldn't mm-hmm. be. It probably wouldn't be as efficient. So it all leads into some of their other genius behaviors, if you will.
Yeah. So what is that? What is that? It's perfect. It's a perfect segue. So well, it's just their behavior is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And once again, too, I think we're still at the, we're just at the beginning of learning about them, but I love that the movie brought this up and was, you know, accurate of the manta ray behavior. But in general, from what's been studied so far is that the manta ray brain power, their intelligence, blows other fish out of the water. Pardon the pun. Right.
Yeah, but, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're giant. They're charismatic. I mean, and in the fish world, they are geniuses. They're the ones going to Harvard, if you will, or Cambridge or Yale. So they, the manta and the mobula, if I'm saying that right, mobula rays have the largest brains out of all 32,000 species of approximately a fish known to date. But manta rays or mobula rays have the largest brains of all 32,000 species approximately of fish that are known to date. Now, as Chris pointed out, there's many that we don't know. But yeah, their behavior is intelligent, cooperative, and coordinated, as Chris had mentioned with their feeding behavior. And they have huge brains, the biggest brain of any fish.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. And they're really well developed for their brains are developed for areas of learning and problem solving and communicating. So as much as we love sharks, and we haven't covered a shark species yet because it's going to be a big, amazing thing that we're probably going to do this fall. We're going to get some researchers involved. So that's, we haven't done sharks. However, a manta ray's brain be 10 times larger than a whale shark's.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So
a ray. Yeah. A manta ray. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's not only a big brain physically, but relative to their body size as mm-hmm. well, which is mm-hmm. similar. That's also a sign of intelligence, like with elephants and dolphins and people too, that mm-hmm. For it's not just the size that matters when we mm-hmm. talk about brains. Mm-hmm. When we talk about other parts of the body, sometimes it really is just about the size. Yeah. But
if you're a blue whale, that's the only one I can go back to.
If you're there, exactly. but with the brain, it's size to body proportion, which these manta rays have got it going on. Mm. And so, this is what I found crazy amazing, and it was fun to read the study more in depth. But the giant rays, they're playful and they're curious, and researchers think that they might be able to even recognize themselves in a mirror, which in animal behavior studies is a sign of self-awareness, mm-hmm. which in animal learning and cognition research is one of the highest levels in the animal kingdom of intelligence. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So elephants can do it. Primates can do it. I think we thought one of the species we've covered recently, maybe it was the hyena. They think maybe can do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Hyenas are
don't quote me on that. I'd have to go back and look at my show notes, but it's pretty uncommon in the animal kingdom. And so obviously I'm sure a dolphin can, but a 2016 study, found that captive mantas would swim repetitively back and forth in front of a mirror for an unusually long time. Mm-hmm. And they would examine other body parts that they otherwise wouldn't see. So they would roll and unroll their different fins 10 times more often when the mirror was present versus when it wasn't. And
that's crazy.
They would blow bubbles while looking at the mirror, which just, I get all cheesy because it reminds me of my 23-month-old Zachy. He's super into bubbles, and he's like, big bubba. Because he can't say bubbles and he can't blow bubbles. Yeah. And so, he tries really hard. But anyways, so they would blow bubbles, which is just super charming and cute. And So researchers aren't 100% sure, and they say that, you know, more tests are needed to get a definitive answer. But a lot of these behaviors with the mirror would imply self-recognition, which would imply higher cognition and a lot higher cognition than most, definitely most fish, but even a lot of land mammals as well.
I'll say you have made me such a behavior nerd because as much as I love physiology and biology, behavior is so awesome to study and learn about.
I know.
So that is crazy. Like, how fun would that be to watch that behavior?
I know. Like,
of a fish.
And yes. I always, because of course I love positive, operant conditioning and positive reinforcement training. And it blew my mind years ago to find out that you can do that with fish. You can like use a laser pointer and train them to move to different parts and of the tank. And, but now this is like a whole nother crazy, crazy level. And I just think it goes to show that we are just at the beginning of understanding, many species in general, land mammals, animals in the ocean, fish in the ocean, mammals in the ocean. And I know that us humans are so smart and we've got it all figured out and we can, you know,
we have gone to the moon, so I'll give us that.
Yeah. We've definitely done some amazing things, but it also, Chris, I don't know, and obviously you can cut this part out, but it always, that's kind of what infuriates me or frustrates me is like, we are so smart, so we should be able to figure out how to save these guys. So to give them a fair chance or give us a fair chance to learn how smart they are and what their needs are. Yeah. Because they've been around for 5 million years, more or less. And and we're just,
We should be able
we're at the cusp.
Well, us and our listeners and like the team of people that we interview all the time, there are people out there working hard. I remind myself that all the time. You know, I get some of these sad stories that come across, you know, we cover some of the stuff in the news segments on Fridays. That's not the best, but I'm always reminding myself, as depressing as it is reading some of this stuff, I realize there's so many great people out there doing so much.
Oh yeah. Good. And wait till we get to the conservation groups I selected today. Yeah. There's definitely other, there's a lot of manta ray fans out there in general and scientists and researchers that really want to learn more about these guys, save the oceans that they swim in, and take good care of them. So it is. And that's why I love this podcast, because I'm, besides learning every day about animals and the environment, there's a lot of positive things going on. And I think it's hopeful that we just got to keep that train going, right? Keep the positive train going. But otherwise with their behavior, once again, there's not a ton known about their behavior because they are only kept under human care in a few facilities. So studying them in the ocean at nighttime can be difficult. However, many groups, like I will touch on at the end of this section, are doing a good job. But we do know that they like you said, they can migrate. But some the reef manta tends to be a little bit more residential, they are really the Atlantic manta ray is really active during the mating season and has been recorded leaping out of the water 7 feet in the air and smacking against the surface.
Wow. Yeah.
So
that's crazy.
And researchers, once again, are just hypothesizing why they do this, but they think that it might be to remove some of the parasites or maybe those cookie cutter sharks.
I know.
Getting rid of some of the parasites and also maybe some of the dead skin on their bodies. But interestingly enough, the giant manta ray has been observed at quote unquote cleaning stations where it, where fish will just stay there and a certain type of fish swims around them, picking off parasites and dead skin. So it's like a manta ray manicure or no pedicure. Like they just pedicure. They're just like doing their, like they're just swimming around them. And once again, showing another sign of intelligence of like, hey, I'll just go to this area and make this little guy do the work and I get to benefit off of it. And then they also have a symbiotic relationship, which most of our listeners, I'm sure, are familiar with a remora fish, Which of course will attach to rays, skate sharks, and hitches ride with them. Mm-hmm. And that will also clean off their parasites. But mm-hmm. yes, this, mm-hmm. but like whales, this breaching behavior is pretty spectacular. And I don't know if it's seen in the giants, but it's definitely seen in the reefs.
It's still 20 foot or almost 20 foot flying fish coming at
you. 7 feet in the air.
Wow,
yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah.
Switching gears to reproduction, just briefly, their mating season for a sexually mature manta ray is going to occur in most parts of the world from December to late April. And during this time, they'll gather in large numbers, and several males will court a female. And I don't know if they know all the details of how a female picks a male or what pheromones or even probably much about how all this goes down. But they have observed that a male will swim closely behind the tail of another female at about 9 to 12 kilometers per hour. Mm-hmm. And he'll do this for 20 to 30 minutes, which finally the female, she just kind of slows down and she's like, all right. Okay. I'm sick of swimming around. It doesn't seem, it's not super romantic. It's not one of the most flamboyant behavioral courtship displays that we've seen on here. But once again, this is what researchers know about it. There might be other things that are missing from this. The male will breed the female. He arranges his body under the female's, and the rays and the manta rays have a cloaca, and he'll breed her, and he'll deposit his semen, which doesn't take very long. And then he swims away. And then interestingly enough, he's out. But interestingly enough, another female will move quickly in and repeat the same process.
Oh, another male?
Another male will come in.
Okay, I thought you said female.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. No. Another male will come in. Like he's number two in line. He'll come in, breed the female. And then after the second male breeds, then she's out. She's like, okay, I'm done.
Okay.
So it's usually just the second male. Okay. And then, so I don't think researchers know a lot about why or what the benefit of having this is, or if there's sperm competition.
Well, yes, you make a good point too, which maybe at some point we'll talk about that too, is in sperm competition, because that's really cool biology in some species. But just genetic diversity. I mean, I think about that too, you know, just making sure they stay diverse.
In some species, like I know in cats, they can have a litter where they can have different fathers. Each kit or kitten or whatever it's called can come from a different male. But interestingly enough, with the manta rays, at least, their gestation period is for about 13 months for the giant manta rays, but they give birth to typically just one pup. They're called pups. Sometimes two.
Oh, okay.
So if there is sperm competition, it seems like one was, you know, typically there's only one pup, maybe two born. So I guess if there's two born, then maybe there's a chance for, but yeah, it's super interesting. And as a reproductive physiologist, it just always, it gets me all tithered. I want to know more, but unfortunately, I'll have to talk to an expert because there isn't a lot of information out there that I could find. But they do.
No. I was just going to say, it goes back to what we covered a few weeks ago in the news segment was the nursery that they found. Mm-hmm. Like they had no clue where the young were. They could never find them. And then all of a sudden, so this researcher, Josh Stewart out of Scripps, out of UC San Diego, they found this nursery of young manta rays. And it was cool because earlier when you said the spots, I remember after reading this study, that's how they identified them is by the spots. That's, right. They stayed in that
spot.
Yeah,
it's like they can probably do like photographic that place, images to tell them apart. We do that a lot with like zebra stripes and pretty much any animal with a pattern. And so the thing that's really cool about rays is they do give live birth to their pups. And one of the things that is cumbersome to their generation intervals and or for their overall conservation, how they rebound in the wild, their numbers rebound, is that a female will produce a baby every 1 to 3 years. And so with a 3 year interval, and then I believe they don't sexually mature until they're like 5 years old, or 5 years old or so. It's a long generation interval. And so it's unlike other fish species or shark species, they have a quicker generation interval. Their numbers can rebound at a faster rate. That's, you know, that's not going to happen, with the giant, manta rays. But I would also just lastly with the offspring, they do grow at a rapid rate, and they can, they're going to double their body width through the first year of life. But the cute thing I thought visual for me is that the pups, when they're born, they're kind of wrapped up by their pectoral fins. But once they're born, they pretty much unwrap free swimming, and they'll basically fend for themselves.
That's cool though. That's
And I also, yeah, I also found it interesting, and I don't know if this is true. Did you come across this though, that basically manta rays, they never stop swimming?
Oh no, I didn't come across that. Yeah. Well, there are. Okay. Yeah, there are fish that I read somewhere to breathe. So.
Yeah, they. What I read is they never stop moving. They must keep the water flowing over their gills to respire or breathe.
Well, you know, it's interesting you talk about the generation interval, because that I was just thinking of their conservation status being vulnerable. And, you know, we did talk about the bycatch being a problem, getting caught in gill nets. The populations are fragmented. They don't move across ocean basins, right? They stay, like I said.
In both species, the giants and the reefs are vulnerable.
Yeah.
Listed as vulnerable by the IUCN.
I guess I shouldn't be surprised by this, Angie, but it just China, we need to educate China, Chinese herbal medicine in Southeast Asia. So their big thing right now is they're just being overfished, and the demand for their gill rakers have popped up as popular Chinese herbal medicine. And so that is where the population in the Indo-Pacific has been reduced. I think IUCN said up to 95%.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. So they've gotten just hammered hard. It's fetching about $500 US per kilogram. And so what it is they're claiming it boosts the immune system, cure cancer, chicken pox, infertility, all the same crap.
But it's just rows of cartilage. Everything has cartilage. Like, go get it.
Yeah.
That doesn't even make
it makes no sense.
But none of it does. And honestly, probably for some of these people making money off of it, they don't want there to be scientific studies.
No.
Because they know that it would prove that it's BS.
It does nothing. There's no support from science, and there's actually no support in Chinese herbal medicine texts. Like, even what, you know, the ancient Chinese herbal medicine, just like some fad. It's like, oh, take this. This will cure cancer.
It's like hipster Chinese medicine, which is the worst kind.
So they've just been decimated. I mean, you know, their population has been just, you know, like I said, 30% reduction with that long interval. It's really sad. It's really sad for them.
But the good news is there are a couple groups that are working really hard. Actually, there's way more than a couple. I picked some of the more well-established one. For instance, my first conservation organization of the week is called Manta Trust, and they can be found at www.mantatrust.org. They have a great presence on Facebook, tons of news and updates. They'll let you know what's going on, and you can see some of the beautiful photos and videos that Chris and I have been talking about. But the Manta Trust is, I want to go work for them now. Just like,
usual. I'm going to do that study with the, mirrors.
These guys are great. They take a multidisciplinary approach to worldwide conservation. So they're not just in one area or the other. To understand more is about manta rays and their conservation and their habitat using science, research, and then, of course, also raising awareness and providing education to the public and stakeholders. They do this through many research projects. I don't have time to go into all of them, but one of their founding research projects or flagship research project is called the Maldivian Manta Ray Project. And it's been going on for more than a decade across this island nation. And it's one of the largest longstanding manta ray conservation groups in the world. So
I really want to go to the Maldives. I do. Manta rays and whale sharks.
I mean, you're closer than I am, right? Like that.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. It's, so yeah.
If it's a numbers game, you should go now. While you're actually in kind of somewhat right half of the world.
Close. Yeah.
But this group, they also bring a lot of other groups together and help them get established from around the world to help drive conservation research. They have a project in Fiji, another place you should go since you're so close. Mm-hmm. I mean,
Fiji's close. Yeah,
relatively
Fiji's
speaking. Close. Yeah, that would be a nice, like, that's what you guys should do for like your anniversary or something.
Yeah. It's in a few days. Okay. I'm actually going to Mount Doom in a few days for our anniversary.
That is so not Fiji. That is so, I mean.
It's where they filmed Mount Doom in Lord of the Rings. So it's Tapo. It's supposed to be gorgeous though.
Pretty cool.
We've got a house on the lake. Yeah, it's gonna be good.
But you got the parents in town. You should just say, forget that. I'm taking Ashley to Fiji.
Fiji.
She can thank me later.
Yeah.
You're gonna help out with the Fiji Manta Ray Project from the Manta Trust Group and life
that's
will be good.
But
yeah, no, so this group and then they work with groups out of Peru because Peru is one of the areas where a lot of bycatch is happening. Mm-hmm. And so they're trying to work with local communities on fishing and, of course, on helping them with their ecotourism and aiding the government to build capacity and regulations towards protecting these manta rays. And they even do right up our area, like you were talking about. They did a research study about in 2006 about, does tourist behavior affect reef manta feeding ray behavior?
Okay.
So, man, I was some grad student. I'm like, that was some lucky kid, man, that got to study that, right?
Yeah, fun project.
Oh, man, right?
Yeah, fun project, yeah.
But, yeah, so the Manta Trust does a lot. And then what I really enjoyed, too, because I did participate in manta ray ecotourism out of Kona, Hawaii, the Manta Trust provides they acknowledge that manta rays can be very sensitive to ecotourism and disturbances. Mm-hmm. So they've developed proper measures and they have a guide called Best Practice Code and Conduct for Manta Ray Tourism. And they have a video, How to Swim with Manta Rays Initiative, and a 10-step guide and a short educational film to help educate tour operators, governments, things like that to put it out there, to get the best bang for the buck, to not harm or interfere with the manta rays and their behavior, but also to be able to provide obviously a very amazing experience to tourists like myself.
Tourists.
So they,
yeah. And there you go, Angie. There's another group of people that are making a difference for.
Oh yeah.
One species,
absolutely. Right? And they even went as far to compile, they have a list of tourism operations that they believe are committed to sustainable manta ray tourism. So all that's on their website. Check it out. Chris will provide links and some videos, but the Manta Trust, www.manatrust.org. Maybe they're hiring. If you're listening, give me a call.
Yeah, we'll help you out. We'll help you out.
Send Chris and I to Fiji. No, I take that back. Send Chris and Ashley to Fiji. Or have all.
Are there,
yeah. Have all of our families meet. Are in Hawaii. Yeah. As well.
In Hawaii. Yeah. We'll
and then the second conservation organization that I select this week is a little closer to your neck of the woods. It's a little more specialized. Mm-hmm. It's called Project Manta, and they are on Facebook. They're a nonprofit organization out of Brisbane in Queensland, Australia. Okay. Yeah. So yeah. They're
across the Tasman Sea.
Yes. They're on your side of the world. They're near you. And, Chris will provide the link to their homepage, but, Project Manta has a big Facebook presence. So check them out on Facebook for easy access. And the Project Manta, it studies manta rays and it aims to provide the much needed, as Chris and I have talked about, biological and ecological information on the species that inhabit the Australian waters. And they really investigate the connectivity and movement between populations of manta rays within Australia and neighboring regions, like New Zealand. And they generate accurate estimations of population size. And basically their goal is to try to understand biological environmental drivers of population dynamics. Then they take this information because they're also, they're with the university there out of Brisbane, Queensland, Australia. But they take this information and they provide management recommendations for the government and the stakeholders in the area. But obviously right. They're out of a university, so they work with scientists, industry partners, and of course the public to learn about long-term sustainability for these big, beautiful guys. And then of course they do support economic and social benefits of well-done ecotourism.
Yeah. Yeah, I love our – we have a big following in Australia too, so love our Aussies. Love them, love
Yay,
them, love them.
Yay,
yeah.
Australian fans. Yeah. Love you guys.
Yeah, I love Australia. Yeah, I actually got back. I was like, oh, she was on the Gold Coast. Lucky her. Yeah, so
– Lucky her. Yeah, she didn't need to go to Fiji. She just got back.
I know. I need to go to Fiji. I'll just – I'm going to Fiji for my anniversary by myself now. So, you know, Angie, conservation tip this week – We just keep hitting the plastics. That is great. It's picking up steam. I'm seeing it everywhere. Even my grocery stores now here in New Zealand, they are charging for bags.
Starbucks, yeah. I didn't read the article because I haven't had time. I've been so busy on vacation. Yeah. But Starbucks just announced getting rid of the straws.
Yeah. So it's picking
up
steam.
That's huge here in the States because there's like a Starbucks in every corner. So yeah, that's everywhere. Huge. And I don't know. Like I said, I didn't read the article. I don't know when they're implementing it, but it's all forward motion, which is exciting.
Yeah, it's good. It's good news that we're picking up steam with the plastics. So our conservation tip this week, though, was a little bit different. And I looked at, because this came up in the news, that Hawaii is passing a bill to ban certain sunscreens that are contributing to coral bleaching.
Yes.
So I know corals are on our radar. Not to give it away, but I know it's on Angie's radar.
I've been talking about corals. Yes, we've been talking about corals for a couple of weeks now, and I am trying to work that train. That's all I'm going to say.
Yes, yeah.
Trying to get something done with that. If we did corals, though, I would need like weeks to prepare because that is way out of my comfort zone.
Yeah. But they are incredible organisms.
Right. I would learn so much. Like you and I would just be like happy dorks learning.
Yeah. But they are collapsing. I mean, corals around the world are dying fast.
Oh, well, yeah. Fast. I mean, just in your neck of the woods or oceans.
Yeah. The Great Barrier Reef. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So sunscreens are actually contributing to coral bleaching. Now, it's a little bit – the data is still being argued. That, if you put on sunscreen and go into the water, you're not going to have an effect on the corals there in Lake Michigan.
Right.
Right? Because you don't have any coral reefs in Lake Michigan.
Not anymore. But we used to.
Yeah, not anymore.
And that's what I've been hunting for all week are what are called Petoskey stones. So they're fossilized corals from whatever. Yeah. Thousands, maybe millions of years ago. I don't know.
Millions of years ago. Yeah.
Me. Long time ago. I don't do evolution, but I do like looking for fossils of corals in Lake Michigan from when they used to be here. But yes, but no, there's currently there are none.
Yeah. So, it's okay. Or if you're just going outside, you're okay. But where large groups of tourists gather, like in Hawaii, where you just were, when you go in the water with these sunscreens that have these chemicals in it that they believe it's contributing to coral bleaching. So I actually have a list. I'm going to post the link, of certain brands you can buy. So if you do go to the Bahamas or you are going diving near corals, I highly, highly, please use these because they're the two substances is oxybenzone and oxtenoxate.
Those are which those are the main ones in a lot of sunscreens.
Yeah, they're almost all of them. And that's what they believe could be contributing to coral bleaching. Like I, on Oahu, because I've been to Maui and Oahu, I know in Oahu there was a beautiful coral reef that it was just a hot tourist hotspot, and it was great to go right. snorkel and just had tons.
Oh, I mean, well, that's why yeah. I loved Kona, off the coast of the big, the west coast of the Big Island is we literally could just walk from the beach or bring your flippers and your snorkel and just from the beach go whatever
right there
20 yards out
and
boom, I was swimming with sea turtles and I didn't pay anything.
Yeah.
And I probably had some bad sunscreen on.
Yeah. But we didn't know.
We didn't know.
We didn't know.
But now we know. But now we know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're in, and it sounds like there's companies that are stepping up the plate and providing hopefully some affordable alternatives.
Yes.
Which it's all just about, it's all just about educating yourself and being a little bit more prepared and taking teeny tiny steps that potentially over the long term could really benefit, our oceans. And the animals.
Yeah, there's a bunch. Been. Like this one's ThinkSport. It's SPF 50, All Good, SPF 30, Babbo Botanicals. I mean, there's a list of them I have. Cool. And I'll post the link on the show notes. So
awesome, Chris. That's a great one.
Yeah. So there you go. Making the world a better place one thing at a time. For us, don't forget to follow us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, follow us on Twitter. We are there and Angie and I are pretty active. I love Instagram, Angie. I'm still going to get you on there. The videos, I think I sent you the baby hippo one. I don't know if you had time to watch it. The baby hippo with the baby rhinos.
I did. I actually found
the real video. Oh my God. I'm following the Rhino Orphanage on Instagram. It's. Oh my God.
That's where you find me when I run away from the world.
All right. Well, thank you for listening. We will be back. We'll be actually be back Friday with news, and then we will be back next week with a really good species and a really good interview. So next week's going to be amazing too. And then Angie will finally get back to Florida in the heat.
And then freeze. I'll be ready to stay in the air conditioning and just pump out these podcasts every day.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, enjoy your blueberries, Angie.
Oh, thank you, Chris. Enjoy your family and your anniversary, not in Fiji, but that's okay. Lord of the Rings is pretty cool as well. Yeah.
Well, I'll talk to you in a couple of days.
Yes, you will.
Listen, learn, share. Join the movement at allcreaturespod.com.